as Alex said, the main thing I want to talk about is our recent ACT lensing work and some cross-correlations that we've been doing, including with Alex, using ACT DR6 lensing and then unwise galaxies. So just as a brief overview, I think most people will be familiar, but what are we trying to do, right? So CMB lensing essentially probes the large-scale structure of the universe, and we're trying to learn about different aspects of fundamental physics and cosmology, dark matter, dark energy, GR, anything you really want to think about. Neutrino mass is a big thing that we've been interested in recently, and many more things. Obviously, there's multiple ways of probing the large-scale structure with the CMB. People have been looking into the Zonaya-Sadovich effect, so both the thermal as well as the kinetic. But what I want to focus on is gravitational lensing. And so after the CMB is emitted at redshift 1100, the CMB photons have to sort of pass through the universe, and they're being deflected by the gravitational potentials of the matter in the universe. And that's what we call gravitational lensing. And it's sensitive to the projected matter density all the way up to the surface of last scattering. So how do we measure this? Well, lensing breaks the isotropy of the CMB. And so we can reconstruct a lensing signal using these quadratic estimators, essentially taking two powers of the observed CMB and looking at correlations between different scales in the CMB to reconstruct what the lensing is. And what you see here is that reconstruction from our recent ACT DR6 lensing analysis. So it covers about 9,400 square degrees, so about 23% of the sky. And if we zoom in on this region that I framed in gray, what you see here on the top is essentially the projected dark matter structure, which you can see by eye. Now, obviously, I've filtered this so that to highlight the scales on which we are signal dominated, but I think it's really interesting that you can see by eye where the dark matter is in this map. And what I think is also cool is once we overlay on top of this a heat map of CIB emission, you can see by eye how correlated this is going to be with the CIB, which is really interesting. And this is mostly work led by my colleagues in Cambridge, Frank, Neil, and Dong Wan, and then Matt Madavachel, who's at Penn. And we put this out, three recent papers. If you're interested in any of the details, I probably won't have time to go into much detail on the lensing outer spectrum analysis today, but that's where you can find everything about the reconstruction, about all the tests we've done on it, and about the lensing outer spectrum. Now, having introduced CMB lensing a little bit, I want to just very briefly look at what we can do with the CMB lensing outer spectrum analysis in terms of cosmology. So the main observable, obviously, is the power spectrum of that lensing map. What you see here on the right, the black curve, is a prediction from lambda CDM fit to the primary CMB from Planck. So there's no data in here. There's not a fit to any of our results. And then if I go forward, we see now our data points added onto this in red. And what's exciting is that they agree exceptionally well with that prediction. I stress again, there's no, this curve is not a fit to our data. So the fact that this works so well really is a testament to how good lambda CDM, however sort of unsatisfying it is from a principal point of view, it really works exceptionally well for making this extrapolation from redshift 1100 to redshift around 1 work to this level. What you can also see on this figure are our noise levels. So in red is the noise level from ACT. And you see we're sort of signal dominated on a mode-by-mode basis out to L of 150. That's why you were able to see by eye the structure in the map. And this is significantly better than what Planck was doing, which is shown in blue.
That's a quick question.
Yeah.
Just naively speaking, how are the error bars so tiny in the regime where your noise dies?
Okay, sorry. I should stress. So this the noise level I'm showing is the per mode noise level. So as I go out to higher L, I have 2L plus 1 modes. So that's why we're averaging down there. So that's, sorry. And so with these error bars, we're detecting the CMB lensing power spectrum at 43 sigma, which to this at this point is sort of the leading detection of this signal. Oh yeah, so these are our analysis regions. So at very low L, we cut everything off because of large-scale systematics, mostly related to the galaxy. On small scales, most of the problems arise from foregrounds. So TSC contamination, CIB contamination. And we sort of define two ranges, a conservative one, which we set as our default, and then a slightly extended range, which includes three additional band powers for a slightly more constraining power, which also passes all our tests, but we have some, like it's just slightly less conservative in the analysis. Okay, and I think it's interesting how far we've come with this. So from the early ACT results in 2011 all the way to today, the error bars have sort of shrunk and we've converged very close to the CMB prediction again in black here. And I think the most recent SPT results are actually not even on here. So there's really been like a fury of results in this that have come out over the last sort of year, 2 years, and so on. So before I go into showing you some cosmology with this, I wanted to highlight just a few interesting and novel things about this analysis. As I said, won't really go into much detail, but if you have questions, please feel free to ask me about this. So the first thing is, when we first started doing this analysis, what we always saw was here on the top right, these green points, which show this characteristic sort of U-shaped bias. You would expect these points, so this is a null test, so this should go to zero. But we always got this characteristic bias. And what was happening was essentially that when you're reconstructing CMB lensing, you're measuring the power spectrum of that. What you're doing is you're measuring the four-point function of the CMB. So there's a bias arising from the disconnected part, so essentially just the product of two power spectra, that needs to be subtracted in order to recover the lensing signal. And the problem was that that is also sensitive to the noise modeling. And in our simulations that we were using to subtract this bias, the instrumental noise was not very accurately captured. And that's the reason for that is that it's really difficult to model the noise in these sort of ground-based CMB experiments very accurately, because you have the atmosphere, you have strange leakage between polarization and temperature, and that makes all of this very complicated. So what we ended up doing is we split our data into four time-separated splits, so just random time chunks contributing to four sort of equal weight maps. And then we use those four maps, which now have uncorrelated noise, to reconstruct our lensing. So now we're no longer as sensitive to getting the noise modeling right in the simulations we're using for reconstruction. Additionally, on very small scales, I said there's a problem with biases that come from foregrounds, like TSC. Yeah.
So you're cross-correlating data at different times.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. The noise is uncorrelated.
Yeah, the noise is uncorrelated, in particular the atmospheric one, which is hard to model. So on small scales, we have this issue with foregrounds, like TSC clusters, CIB, and what we do to mitigate that is we use these foreground biased hardened lensing estimators, which is essentially explicitly subtract the signal that would be expected from the presence of foregrounds in our data. And then we do a whole suite of tests on this data. We run tests on foreground simulations, but we also run a large suite of tests of null and consistency tests on the data. And the analysis is done fully blind, so we freeze all the analysis choices, including the scales set for our baseline and extended range prior to unblinding and looking at cosmology. And so the first thing that we can weigh in on is the formation of cosmic structure. The main parameters of interest here are sigma 8, or this combination sigma 8 omega matter to the 0.25. You'll notice this is slightly different from the standard S8 parameter. This is the parameter combination best constrained by CMB lensing. And we constrain this with ACT data alone to about 2.66%. But we're also consistent with the lensing analysis from Planck. And so we combine them at the likelihood level to get an improved 2.2% constraint. which is perfectly consistent with predictions from fits to the primary CMB, either from Planck or from ACT plus WMAP. If you maybe didn't trust Planck, there's an independent prediction there as well. And the problem, however, is that there's this very strong degeneracy between sigma 8 omega matter. And in order to break that, we can add baryon acoustic oscillation information, which provides constraints primarily in the omega matter H-naught plane. And that tightens these constraints, and we constrain sigma 8 to 1.8 and 1.6%, again, with ACT alone or with ACT plus Planck. And I should highlight that this looks really strange because the BAO constraints are these gray dashed lines. The lensing without BAO is this unfilled contour, but then this is not the intersection of these two. Essentially, what I'm not showing here, there's a third dimension, and that's sort of going out of the projector, which is H-naught. And so essentially, the CMB lensing constraints are a tube in the omega matter H-naught sigma 8 space. And so once you're adding BAO data, you're slicing through that tube in just a particular point, which gives you this really tight contour and the constraints on sigma 8.
Have you tried making a 3D plot of that tube?
Yes.
We have.
It's in the paper that was led by Matt Madavacero. However, it's not so nice to show on a presentation.
Is the value of H-naught, you know, selected by this?
I'll get there in a second. So before I get to H-naught, let me just talk a bit about the structure and how this compares to other results. So these results are consistent at the sort of 1.7, 2.1 sigma level with galaxy weak lensing results from cosmic shear, from DES, KITS, and HSC. But we consistently find somewhat larger amplitude of this parameter S8. Now here, I'm actually showing S8, so sigma 8 omega matter to 0.5. And in order to make this a meaningful comparison, we've combined all the lensing results with BAO, because in this parameter combination is not very well constrained by lensing alone. Okay. The other thing that we can weigh in on by combining our data with data from the primary CMB, we can probe the evolution of structure over time. And because neutrinos affect the formation of structure, because they free stream out of gravitational potentials and suppress the formation of structure, we can constrain the neutrino mass. And with a combination of our ACT DR6 lensing and Planck data plus BAO, we constrain the neutrino mass to less than 0.12 eV at 95% confidence, which is one of the leading constraints of the sum of the neutrino masses to date. And now to get back to your H-naught question. So one way that we can weigh in on H-naught is by combining with BAO, because we have information on the matter density that sharpens the BAO constraints. And so we get the 68 plus or minus 1 and a bit, which is a 1.6% constraint on H-naught. So perfectly consistent with the primary CMB. What's perhaps a more interesting measurement, actually, is can we measure H-naught independently of BAO? And the answer is yes, we can. By combining our data with omega matter information from uncalibrated supernovae, we can make a measurement of H-naught that depends on the equality scale. So essentially, the turnover of the matter power spectrum instead of the BAO feature. We're just using a different standard ruler in this case. And we get this significantly weaker 5% constraint on H-naught, but it's now independent of the sound horizon, which is interesting because lots of the models that resolving the H-naught tension will do so by modifying the sound horizon. So early dark energy, for example, will change the sound horizon, so that will change your H-naught, both from the CMB as well as from BAO, but it will at least not in the same way affect the results dependent on the equality scale. Now, this is obviously not very strong, and unfortunately, with CMB lensing, this isn't going to get a lot better. So even with future results, yeah.
So if I, over the sequence of the past few slides, compare the constraints we get from Planck lensing to ACT lensing, ACT lensing doesn't really do a whole lot. We which surprised me a little bit because of tiny error bars.
Sorry, how? Where would I?
Yeah, I mean, if we flip, look here, Planck lensing plus supernova plus BBN, ACT lensing plus supernova plus BBN. I guess I draw from the fact that those are about the same.
Well, so ACT and Planck are about the same. So it's an independent check on Planck in the lensing, on the lensing side.
Yeah, I guess the point is that ACT lensing does not seem to improve.
So in the combination, yes, that you don't gain as much, but that's mostly because these two measurements are very correlated, right?
The size of the error bar is roughly
Of the error bar of what? Of the combined ACT plus Planck constraint?
Yeah, or just look through all the previous slides. I mean, there's some improvement, but it's not
Yeah, no, I agree that the combination of ACT and Planck doesn't gain you very much over ACT or Planck alone. I think that's not unexpected. I mean, given that these are going to be correlated, they see the same CMB. Lots of the covariance comes from the primary CMB, right?
I'm not talking about their correlation. I'm just talking about our ability to measure, to reconstruct the lensing potential has improved greatly with that.
Yes, sure.
If you look at the first plot you showed,
yeah,
the noise per.
But you're saying.
But that does not seem to have translated into what I would have
improved cosmology constraints.
Far better cosmology constraints. So
Yeah, I think that's true. So part of it is that ACT obviously sees only a smaller fraction of the sky, right? So you're gaining a noise level, but you're losing out in sky area. So I think that's the main trade-off. So if you could observe a larger fraction of the sky at the noise levels that ACT provides, you'd win over Planck by a significant amount. So
in the future, then, when we do have like wider areas with a precision similar to ACT,
Well, I mean, the areas are not, like, from the ground, the areas are not going to get that much bigger, right? But with future CMB lensing, even from the ground, even if the area is smaller than Planck, you will still win out over Planck because now your noise levels are starting to be so low that you're, despite the lack of area, you gain over the Planck constraints.
If you were to show the error bars on the lensing potential, would it look like the ACT provides a huge improvement on smaller scales compared to Planck?
Yeah, that's true. Where we were sort of signal dominated on an L by L, mode by mode basis out to 1150 for Planck, that's less than 100. So it's like 70 or so.
Another question, you said you combine at the likelihood level.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So it's just a joint likelihood for the lensing band powers from Planck and ACT.
What, you take the cross correlation.
Yes, you take the correlation into account. What you could alternatively be considered to do is make a joint map of ACT and Planck. And this has been done for a previous ACT work. Sorry?
Like in the talks I've seen.
And there's thought of like actually making sort of a science-ready map that is ACT on the areas that ACT observes and then Planck everywhere else. But
I guess the R5 and so on have Planck plus ACT.
Yes, but this doesn't yet exist for DR6.
Sorry, what was the area of the ACT that
So ACT lensing is about 23% of the sky.
23%?
23, yeah. So a bit under a quarter of the sky. Right, so I've talked about probing structure formation using CMB lensing, and now I want to add to that using our recent cross-correlation analysis with the galaxies from UNWISE. So ACT is really a pretty ideal data set to do cross-correlation science with because we have a relatively large overlap with various galaxy surveys. We have cooperation agreements and projects already underway with the Dark Energy Spectroscopic Instrument, with the Dark Energy Survey, with HSC, and with KIDS. And by combining with different samples, we can pursue different science cases. So we can, on one hand, probe structure formation at different redshifts doing these sort of tomographic analyses. by combining with galaxies at various redshift slices, something which you obviously can't do with the CMB lensing alone. You always get the sort of full projected meta density. And then you can also do test primordial non-Gaussianity by combining with quasars. Alex has, for example, worked on things like this, where this could be interesting because it's less sensitive to some of the systematics that make it difficult to measure the scale-dependent bias that would be indicative of primordial non-Gaussianity with the quasar autocorrelation. So in the cross-correlation, you're less sensitive to that, and maybe it's a way forward if you can sort out those systematics. One motivation for probing structure at different redshifts is to narrow in on the SA tension. So people will have seen probably a plot similar to this many, many times. Essentially, various galaxy weak lensing surveys, DES, HSC kits, now these are not all independent, but various different analyses of the same data, they all kind of show consistently a lower amplitude of structure than would be predicted from the primary CMB. Now, this is not strongly significant, but it's striking that different experiments have found this sort of consistently. And generally, two cases of resolutions have been proposed. One is that there could be small scale suppression of power that due to nonlinear structure growth, that something we don't understand there, or stronger than expected baryon feedback. Or there could be a redshift dependent suppression where at late times the formation of structure is suppressed due to, for example, dark energy evolution. I mentioned that our CMB lensing autospectrum results are consistent with the predictions from the primary CMB, but they mostly arise from redshifts sort of greater than 1 and on linear scales k less than 0.2 approximately. And so galaxy weak lensing, on the other hand, largely probes smaller scales but also lower redshifts. So we can't really distinguish between a redshift-dependent suppression that kicks in below redshift of 1 or a scale-dependent suppression that's important for k greater than 0.2, right? And so that's where the cross-correlations come in. They probe relatively large scales, but at low redshift. In the case of the unwise analysis that I'll show you, the redshift we're sensitive to is about 0.2 to 1.6, and we are mostly sensitive to k less than 0.3. You can see that here in the signal to noise as a function of k, particularly the higher redshift bin shown here in green. We have really only sensitive k less than 0.2. The blue one extends a bit further out, but we should keep in mind that this does not marginalize over nuisance parameters. And on these smaller scales, most of the cosmological information is actually lost by marginalizing over higher order parameters. So really, the cosmological information that we're going to extract is mostly kf 0.3 and less. So in this recent analysis that I led, we measured the cross-correlation between our ACT-DS6 lensing and the galaxy number densities from the unwise catalog. I'll describe that in a little more detail in a second, but you can sort of see the redshift distribution here. So the blue and the green sample are the two redshift samples we used, with mean redshifts 0.6 and 1.1, roughly. Unwise is a catalog of more than 500 million galaxies up to redshift 2. It's on the full sky, and after you mass the galactic plane and some nearby objects, you're left with about 60% of the sky, which covers basically all of the ACT lensing footprint. So the full, like the cross-correlation footprint, is about 23% of the sky. This includes observations from the WISE satellite, including 2 years of post-cryogenic observations. In that phase, only 2 photometric bands were available because the satellite had run out of cryogen. And from that, we color select 2 samples that, as I said, we call them blue and green. It's nothing to do with the type of galaxies, just nomenclature. And they have really high number density, which is really cool for these cross-correlation analyses. It's just color cuts. I would have to look at the exact cuts in the space, but yeah. And I should mention there is a higher redshift sample, but in this work, we've chosen to neglect that. There's some evidence it might be contaminated. It's very hard to reproduce even in N-body simulations. So we've chosen to neglect that. Now, since in this post-cryogenic phase, UNWISE had only two photometry bands, you can't do any photometric redshifts. So what we do instead, and this is work mostly led by Alex, we cross-correlate them with spectroscopic galaxies from BOSS and EBOSS. And what that probes is essentially the product of the galaxy bias with the redshift distribution. So this goes under the name of clustering redshifts. And effectively, you're measuring the cross-correlation between the spectroscopic and the photometric sample, and then the spectroscopic autocorrelation. And there, that gives you a handle on this B, D, and DZ. And conveniently, this is actually what appears in all the dominant terms in our model. So we use this combination of B, D, and DZ in most places in our model. We actually never have to separate out sort of the bias from the redshift distribution. There's a few sort of sub-leading terms in our model that contribute at most sort of the 5% level to the signal that for which we need just D and DZ. And so that we get from cross-matching with deep photometric data from Cosmos. Yeah. Sorry, with the spectroscopic or with the photometric sample? So for the spectroscopic analysis, you don't actually require to identify the identical objects. You're just measuring the cross correlation, given that they're tracing the same large scale structure. And then for this cross matching thing, you actually have to identify the identical objects. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head the statistics of how many objects are matched there, but
is it like 1% the same or like 10% the same?
I think
with BOSS, I think it's like 1%.
Yeah, so it being the same objects is probably relatively low, but they should be tracing the same structure, so it should be okay. And the fact that this only obviously covers a small area of the UNWISE footprint is something we propagate into our error bars, and I'll get to that in a second. With this data, we measure the cross spectra at approximately 40 and 50 sigma for the two samples within our analysis range. Now, our analysis range is mostly set on large scales, again, by galactic systematics. So there will be some correlated systematics between the galaxies, like dust extinction on the galaxy side and dust emission that contaminates the CMB lensing. So that sets sort of the large scales. And then on small scales, it's mostly set by the fact that our modeling is not accurate on very small scales. And so this is determined by us running a mock analysis on n-body simulations that have been populated with an HOD tuned to reproduce the unbiased samples. And if we go to smaller scales than L of 400, we are unable to recover unbiased cosmology. And so this is where we set the cut, which then leads to the dependence on K that I showed you earlier. For the galaxy autocorrelation, which we also need, the cut on large scales is slightly more conservative because these are more affected by large-scale systematics. Okay. So what's the idea? Well, what we're after is the fluctuations in the metadensity field, right? From the galaxy autocorrelation, what we get is the galaxy bias squared times sigma 8 squared. From the cross-correlation, we get the same thing, but just with a single power of the galaxy bias. So effectively, you can take that ratio, cancel out the galaxy bias, and constrain just sigma 8. Now, obviously, in fact, what we do is not actually take this ratio, and then you wouldn't want to take the ratio of two noisy quantities, but we write down a joint likelihood for these two things, and yeah.
How do you fix the Lowell constraint on the galaxy-galaxy power spectrum?
The
Lowell criteria by which you select
that? The Lowell? From our null test. So we do a series of null tests, both on CL kappa G as well as on CL GG. We demand that it's sort of consistent under different masks. And so we see that below L of 100, there's lots of fluctuation. So that's where we cut this off.
Yeah. How do you know it's not real? I'm not gonna understand.
How do we know it's not real?
Yeah.
That there
the Lowell fluctuations in non Gaussianity and large scale. I don't understand what you mean by null test.
So essentially, you measure the power spectrum with two different masks. One sort of taking, so there's the 60% mask, so just a 60% of the sky least affected by dust emission as measured by Planck. And then there's a clean amount, 40%, and you take the difference. And you say you expect this to be the power spectrum to be the same, but this doesn't happen to be the case if you look at the very large scales. So you're worried that.
You're talking about unbiased galaxies now, right?
Yes, I'll show a plot of the null test in a second, but.
Yeah, I'm just kind of confused as to how do we know what's real and what's not real when we talk about galaxies. But I guess maybe for CMB I have a better sense, but for unbiased galaxies, I'm not sure what sort of systematics.
Yeah. I mean, there will be selection systematics, obviously, but you wouldn't want those to affect your, like, I think you definitely would want your CLGG measured on the on two different galactic masks to be the same and to be consistent. Yeah. Okay. I'll go into a few details on one or two of these things in a second, but just to summarize some of the highlights of our analysis. So for this cross-correlation redshifts, we improve our redshift calibration slightly by adding additional data. So since the previous analysis by Alex, additional data from EBOS had become available. So that's been included. We also fixed a couple aspects relating to magnification bias treatment in these cross-correlation redshifts and so on. Then we implemented a new method for marginalizing over uncertainties in this redshift distribution. I'll talk about that in a second. We have a new treatment of imaging systematics that's sort of similar to what other galaxy surveys like DS have done, essentially measuring correlations with templates for potential systematics and then correcting for them by reweighting your galaxies. Our model is a hybrid between empirical fits to n-body simulations and then additional terms from Lagrangian perturbation theory. And we again do a huge set of tests and null and consistency tests. And then finally, our analysis, as with the Lensing order spectrum, is fully blind. So I mentioned I was going to talk about how do we marginalize over redshift uncertainties. So essentially, the idea is we have to propagate the uncertainty in our measurements of the cross-correlation redshifts into our cosmology constraints. So what you see on the top is the measurements of the cross-correlation redshift, B, D, N, D, Z, from cross-correlating the unwise samples, blue and green, with the BOS and EBOS samples. And now we draw realizations according to these error bars, and then we perform principal component analysis on these realizations. And what you get is some expansion of the fluctuations around the best fit B, D, N, D, Z expressed as a sum of principal components. And then you have some free coefficients, Ci, over which we'll marginalize in our analysis. The way that we get priors on these CI is by taking all these realizations, which essentially capture our uncertainty in BDNDZ, transforming them into the basis of principal components, and then measuring the distribution of these CI coefficients. And that gives you a prior that you can then put in to your analysis. So this captures sort of similar things that other people have marginalized in this type of analysis. So if you look at the lowest order one, W1, which is this blue dashed curve, essentially what this is, it's just a shift, which is sort of the lowest order thing that other weak lensing surveys, for example, have also included, which is just a shift in the redshift distribution. And then the higher order things are sort of widening or narrowing of the kernels, which is something very commonly otherwise incorporated as well. Okay. On the modeling,
Sorry. Mm-hmm. Why are you doing this? This PCA?
So,
what's the reason to switch to this basis instead of just having the redshift bins as the basis?
So essentially, this is sort of a more or less principled way of choosing a finite number of parameters rather than like marginalizing over each of these parameters. So you kind of have to fit some smooth curves through here, right? So these are splined, and then these
marginalizing over fewer parameters
than if you were marginalizing over every single bin here. Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like going away by the fifth, but I guess maybe if you go to like the tenth.
Sorry.
ECA fluctuations, like by the like fifth one seems to be comparable to the first one or the zeroth one.
Oh, but
this is just
the amplitude of the parameters could decrease, right? Okay. So these are chosen so that 95% of the variance in the BD and DZ can be captured by this expansion, which we found to be sufficient. Like going to more doesn't actually do anything to your cosmology constraints. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure.
I'm not quite sure. Okay, yeah, but
maybe we can return to it. Okay. So in terms of modeling, so I mentioned it's sort of a hybrid between fits to n-body simulations and Lagrangian perturbation theory. So this is inspired by these hybrid effective field theory approaches. It's not quite there yet. So essentially what we're doing is at lowest order, we have a non-linear matter power spectrum given by HM code. So it's a fit to empirical fit to n-body simulations. And then we assume there's a linear bias. And then there's additional terms from Lagrangian perturbation theory, B2, BS, and so on, that we include in this. And to get the evolution of these higher order bias parameters, what we do is we measure the coevolution of sort of B2 as a function of B1 in some n-body simulations. But to marginalize then over this bias, we have a free offset here, C, that's then a free parameter in our analysis. And we also try different parameterization of our uncertainty, so including additionally a free scaling of this coevolution, or including a linear term, C times 1 plus Z, or something like that. But we found that to be basically completely degenerate with just a single offset. And the way you can think of that is, when you're computing the observed spectra, essentially you're integrating over redshift. And so most things you can imagine in terms of redshift evolution can be, at our current precision, be absorbed into just a single free offset. Yeah?
Is there a specific functional form of how the B2 depends on
B1? So this is just a fit to n-body simulations. So it's just an interpolation of the relationship found in an n-body simulation.
So like some polynomial thing, or something.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the exact functional form, I don't know. But yes, I think it's a spline through some data points measured on.
So when you say fit to n-body simulations, does that mean fit to samples of halos or fit to samples of galaxies?
No, it's halos. So this is halos identified in n-body simulations. And then originally tried this without any marginalization over free offsets, and then realized that, you know, the halos obviously are not the same as the galaxies, and so that's where the free parameter came in.
But this free parameter is, I mean, like this parameter is just like some constant, or
yeah.
Is it a redshift
evolution? No. So we checked different redshift evolutions here, and basically anything you could come up with can be absorbed in just an offset. It's basically completely degenerate. If you put in like 1 plus Z times C term here, that will be completely degenerate with this offset at the precision we have.
Do you assume scale dependence in the short noise term?
No, we do not have a 1 over K squared stochastic component, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, because in galaxies it seems to be significant. For galaxies, for anisotropic short noise. I mean, anisotropic scale dependent, k squared, mu squared.
Yeah. Sorry, was there a question? So we did not include the 1 over k squared term. So this model we've verified on n-body simulations. K squared term. So this model we verified on n-body simulations, and it seemed to be working very well. So n-body simulations with an HOD, so in this case it was actually galaxies. So it didn't seem that that was necessary. We are looking into applying some more sophisticated, more sort of principled models in a way in future analyses. But the problem with lots of these projected tracer analysis that if you introduce lots of free parameters related to like a principled like EFT expansion, you get into trouble with prior volume effects because lots of them you can't really constrain very well. So this was sort of a intermediate approach of trying to have a model that we can constrain, but at the same time that has sufficient flexibility to fit the data. Okay. So yeah, in terms of some of the tests, so I said I was going to show some null tests. So this is essentially taking the difference of two band powers measured. So on the left-hand side, what we're using is cross-correlating with lensing reconstructions only at a single frequency. So this is particularly targeting extragalactic foregrounds, which will have a different frequency dependence from the CMB. And what you can see is that our results are consistent with zero, which says there's no evidence of any contamination from extragalactic foregrounds. On the right, we use two different galactic masks. So I said there's this 40% mask and then a 60% mask, which includes slightly more area. You would expect the difference to vanish, but you can see the lowest bin here, which is outside our analysis range. For that, that's not true. And so that's why we set the scale cut there. And I don't think I have a plot of CLGG, but it looks very similar, only that it extends slightly larger. So does that answer your question about what?
Yeah, I mean, it just says that maybe one of those masks is just too loose. I mean, it doesn't necessarily tell you that those L's are bad. So I'm just kind of, I can see that there is an inconsistency, but I don't know. It just says, I can't quite, it just doesn't tell me, what if you use like, even less area? Would these be consistent with each other at those elves or not? But I can see the logic. I just feel there's something missing in it because it just says, okay, so yes, if you include too much of a galaxy, it's not a good thing. But if you cut enough of it, then you should be fine.
Well, so if you continue to cut, then eventually you'll have no constraining power on these large scales, right?
Galaxy is like, I mean, how big are your mass? Is that like, I don't know.
About a quarter of the sky.
Yeah, and then this is L of 50 or 150. Right?
Yeah, but there's some sort of large scale modulation of your signal due to some systematics, imaging systematics, whatever. So that's why we don't really trust these large scale. This is pretty standard. Like most of these sort of analyses do this.
It doesn't seem like very, very large scale. Okay.
So yeah, I think like in galaxy surveys, like these scales are notoriously hard to get right and to not be affected by systematics. Okay. So also mentioned, we do some tests, some simulations. So we use these extragalactic foreground simulations. Then we run our lensing reconstruction on foreground-only maps, so we're measuring essentially the lensing signal induced by the foregrounds and checking that our mitigation for those foregrounds is sufficient. And then we cross-correlate that signal with galaxy samples that are populated onto those simulations. And what you can see is that with our baseline mitigation strategy, there's no significant bias. In fact, it's very, very small. But if you do no mitigation, you get significant biases here, as you can see in the red triangles. So that's one test. So there we already are at cosmology. So I didn't know this was the next slide. Using the two unwise samples, we can put very tight constraints on S8. So in this case, it's actually S8, which is only very slightly different from the best constraint parameter combination. So the best constraint parameter combination is this S8 cross, which is sigma 8 omega mu 2.45. But S8 is pretty close, so we usually report that. So we constrain that to about 2.5%. But as you can see with as within the CMB lensing order of spectrum analysis, there's a stronger generosity between omega matter and sigma 8. And so we break that by adding BAO data, and then we can constrain sigma 8 on its own. And we find, again, a 2.5% constraint approximately. Now, because I know I'll get a question about the consistency between green and blue, so this is consistent at the 1.7 sigma level. It's just that there's a very strong degeneracy here. Essentially, the way you can think of this is at linear order, these two things are perfectly degenerate. So the only information you can get is from higher order things. It's very easy to be pushed around this degeneracy. And so something I'm not showing here, but there's one higher order parameter that essentially is exactly this. So you're just sliding along this higher order bias parameter to improve the consistency between blue and green. And we looked at the Bayesian information criterion for the blue sample, and then also just evaluating that fixed cosmology corresponding to the green sample, and it has basically no preference between the best fit cosmology for the blue sample and the one fit for the green sample. So these are really consistent, yes.
And this includes the galaxy auto, the lensing auto, and the galaxy lensing cross?
No, it only includes galaxy auto and the galaxy lensing cross. There's no lensing auto spectrum yet. So just it's like just two by two point rather than 3 by 2 point. Again, our results are consistent with an equivalent analysis using Planck lensing. So we combine them to get this 1.9% constraint on S8 or 1.8 on sigma 8. You can see sort of the contour shrinking as we're combining ACT-only cross-unwise, Planck-only cross-unwise, and then the combination thereof. Now here, obviously, the Planck analysis has substantially more area, so that's why it's tighter than the ACT one.
Is there a similar inconsistency if you were to take unwise only green, unwise only blue with Planck and ACT?
Yeah, it looks the same. And so I admit this is a slightly gimmicky plot, but essentially it's sigma 8 over the lambda CDM prediction from Planck as a function of redshift or distance. And you can see there's no evidence for any sort of evolution using the two unwise samples, blue and green, and then the autocorrelation of the CMB lensing. Now, I should caution, obviously, the kernels that are going into this are quite wide, so I've just placed them here at the mean redshifts, but really there should be some redshift dependence. Now, this will be something that you can do much better with future analyses using DESI samples, for example, which are much better defined in redshift. So how does it compare to other measurements? You know, it's important, CMB lensing cross-correlation, perfectly consistent, also consistent with the primary CMB, but we overall find a slightly larger amplitude of structure than the galaxy weak lensing surveys do. Now, it's not statistically significant, but it's striking again that it's sort of consistent across different galaxy weak lensing surveys. The one that's slightly puzzling still is this DESI LRG targets cross Planck lensing result, which should be sort of an equivalent analysis to our cross correlation, but still finds lower. The red one. Which finds lower amplitude. There's a follow up of that going on with ACT. We are aware of some things that will move, but we're not entirely sure yet whether it's going to fully resolve this. So this is something to keep an eye out. All right, so let me finish up because I'm running out of time. So to summarize, our results are consistent with the primary CMB. There's no evidence for any suppression of structure on redshifts greater than 0.2 and scales less than roughly 0.3 h megaparsec inverse. And so that motivates sort of looking at explanations of the SA tensions that suppress structure on small scales and investigating that. Looking ahead, we'll do a three-course two-point analysis, so include the lensing auto in with the cross-correlation, which we haven't done yet. We'll also combine that with the primary CMB to improve our neutrino mass constraints. And there will be an additional lensing release from ACT that will include additional data and also more optimal reconstruction techniques. And finally, I should mention there's lots of other cross-correlation projects already going on, including with DESI LRG targets that I mentioned, two different variations actually of the DESI samples, with spectroscopic galaxies from STS's BOSS, with DS, Y3, and eventually we'll go to Y6 as well, and then but also with non-galaxy samples like CIB and TSC clusters. And I'll leave it there, and thank you.
Question about the neutrino mass constraints that you have. Does the ACT lensing, does it add much constraining power compared to primary CMB plus BAO, or?
Yes, it does add something. I don't think I have the comparison anywhere, but it's not substantial, but it is an improvement.
Your cross-correlation analysis goes to smaller redshift, but not smaller scales.
That's largely true, yeah. So
you ruled out these solutions that suppress power as a function of redshift, but not as a function of scales?
Yeah, that's sort of the idea, yes. Now, clearly, the significance is not such that we can sort of strongly rule out anything, but the suggestion is that, yes, that it's less likely that there would be a redshift dependent suppression on all scales rather than a small scale effect which affects the galaxy weak lensing results but wouldn't affect this sort of analysis.
And is there some way, like these smaller scales are only accessible with galaxy?
Well, so that in principle, this information is available, we just don't know how to model it, right? Would be very difficult to extract cosmological information from the cross correlation. We could push this to smaller, like larger L, smaller scales, but there's no, we wouldn't really know how to model that, at least within.
The modeling would be easier for the galaxy weak lensing compared to the CMB lensing.
So essentially, most in galaxy weak lensing, the most of the constraining power comes from the shear, like the cosmic shear analysis, which obviously doesn't include any of the galaxy, like the galaxy halo connection, right?
The shear is the
one thing that goes to the small scales. While actually, if you're looking at lots of the galaxy weak lensing papers, when they do cosmic shear, their SA is very low. And then once they go to 3 × 2 points, so including the galaxy clustering, which they also cut at more conservative scales, it actually increases slightly.
Do you happen to know which scales are sort of dominating this shear result? It's not your Urbano, but
yeah. Do I have the plot? There. So this can include very, very, very highly nonlinear scales, k of order 1, 2, something like that.
Oh, geez.
Yes. So these analyses tend to be like, depends slightly on which analysis you're looking at. If you're looking at DS, they tend to be slightly more conservative, but still include K way beyond what you would consider sort of perturbative control. And then KIDS, for example, is very aggressive.
You guys are confident that the correlated dust between unwise and CMB is not a problem or effect?
Yeah, so we've done various null tests, including this using different galactic masks. And so at the cuts that we're using, there doesn't seem to be any effect. We also used a map where the CIB contamination has been explicitly deprojected, which should also affect galactic dust because of similar SEDs. So it's a frequency-based deprojection. And even though you wouldn't expect it necessarily to remove galactic dust contamination, you would at least galactic dust contamination in the CIB deprojected lensing reconstruction should be different from the baseline one. And so that should show up there.
Do you think that it applies as strongly as an argument for the cross-correlation with the omoids? Because you know they're projected from omoids. It's like a
square. Well, sure, but you're wondering about the autocorrelation of the galaxies. Yeah, for that we only really have the mask-based null test, but we also measured the correlation with some dust templates, and that is vastly reduced by our imaging systematics treatment as well. So,
I have a question about you mentioned the measurement with lensing of S8, and then you use the Pantheon data to break the degeneracy.
So this was for H0.
This was not for S8.
No. So for when we're measuring H0, essentially what we're what the matter radiation equality scale is sensitive to is omega matter H. And so in order to get H0, you need some constraint on omega matter. But we don't want to use BAO because that's where the sound horizon information is already in there, right?
So I was wondering, so you're doing that assuming lambda CDM?
Yes.
So I was wondering if you had any sense of how that story changes if you relax lambda CDM and, let's say, vary the equation of state to, because the Pantheon data should be sensitive to that.
Yeah. I am not sure. So there was some work not explicitly related to this that looked at sort of doing a similar analysis where you're trying to infer H0 from the equality scale, but allowing non-lambda CDM models. That was by Tristan Smith and collaborators. And they essentially, what they saw is that, yes, you're going to widen the constraining power naturally because you have more parameters, right? But the general story that you get a difference between the sound horizon and the quality-based H0 constraints still persists.
So you don't really shift the central value, you just kind of
broaden it. I don't know whether there may have been some shift in the central value, but it's not necessarily important that you'd recover the correct value of H0, right? It's more of a sort of consistency test. In lambda CDM, you really should see the same value in equality and sound horizon-based inference. In a different model, that may not be the case.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of the idea.
Alka Paczynski on the equality peak, I guess, a scale.
Yeah.
So any more questions for Garrett? Okay, well, thanks again.
Thank you.